JC Corcoran Podcast.
You know this whole thing about, you ever meet someone famous and you tell your friends and then they say, well, what was he like? Because all they really want to hear is that he was a prick. So they like to say Tom Cruise is the nicest guy in Hollywood. You know, I always think, well, if I was making $8 million a film, I'd be nice too. Jesus Christ. But I'm not sure he is that nice. Because I always read these articles about how he's so insular and he's into his Scientology and he, you know, stays at a hotel, won't make eye contact with anyone in the hotel, because he doesn't want to talk about the plots to his new films. Apparently, as if staring Tom Cruise in the face, he would just crack under pressure. What are you staring at? Hey, you want to hear about my new film? You seen a Tom Cruise film? Like, he couldn't figure out the plot in about 18 seconds. Oh, Christ. He's a cocktail maker. He's a pretty good cocktail maker, too. Till he has a crisis of confidence and can't make cocktails anymore. Then he meets a good-looking woman who talks him into being a better cocktail maker. A riveting piece of cinema that was. Then he's a race car driver. Pretty good race car driver, too. Till he has a crisis of confidence. Can't race cars anymore. Then he meets a good-looking woman who talks him into being a better race car driver. Then he's a jet pilot. So you're starting to see a pattern emerge here. Pretty good jet pilot. Yes, he was. Till he had a crisis of confidence. Couldn't fly jets anymore. Then I believe he met a good-looking woman who talked him into being a better jet pilot. Then he was a sports agent. Then he was the brother of a retarded guy. He was a pretty good brother of a retarded guy. Then he had a crisis of confidence. He wasn't so sure he was such a good brother of a retarded guy. Then he met a good-looking woman who talked him into being a better brother of a retarded guy. Then he was some kind of, I don't know what he's in now, War of the Worlds. Maybe he fights the world. You know what? I bet he's a pretty good world fighter. But at some point, he'll probably have a crisis of confidence. You're going to meet a good-looking woman who convinces him it's okay to fight the world. Could be a Scrabble player for all I care. He's a pretty good Scrabble player. Until he draws all vowels. Has a crisis of consonants. And he meets a lovely Welsh woman who teaches him a lot of words he's never heard before.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
Friday the 13th, Friday, January 13th, 2023, 33 days before pitchers and catchers start reporting to Jupiter, Florida for Cardinal spring training. You are at jcontheline.com. Apologies, getting on the air late today. Normally we post just a little bit after 7 o'clock, but we're getting on late here today because, unbeknownst to me, in the middle of the night, my computer decided to do a complete systems update, and then the unsuspecting broadcaster comes and sits down, turns on the equipment, starts talking, and the whole thing just shut down, and then did close to a little bit over an hour of computer updates and upgrades, and all I could do is just sit here and watch the damn thing download stuff, and there's just nothing you can do. You gotta wait for it to be over. I tried to override the system, and you should have heard what happened then. So anyhow, here we are, better late than never, and here we go. It's gonna be a cold weekend. We're starting out cold here. Before I start talking about the weather and all that other stuff, that was comedian Rich Hall. He was the guy who invented the Sniglet. It was one of those things that was just really, really cool. It was a bunch of books Idiot Box was the square on an envelope that says the post office won't deliver unless you put a stamp on it. And they had all these great things. And the beauty of this was sort of like Jeff Foxworthy with You Might Be a Redneck If. Jeff Foxworthy wrote one of those books, You Might Be a Redneck If. Then all of his fans who bought the book said, oh, I've got one. And they sent in hundreds of thousands of them. And it was responsible for the publishing of, like, I think it was like 6 or 7 more books. You might be a redneck if you mow your front lawn and find a car. You know, that sort of stuff. Jeff Foxworthy, by the way, one of the nicest guys in show business. He was, this is back when we were on the river, if you remember that radio station. This is going back ancient history, but I never forgot this because he was supposed to do an interview with us and he missed it. And we were really pissed off. And about, I don't know, 40 minutes later, he called from, back then we had payphones. Called from a payphone and basically said, I'm really, really sorry. I was in transit at an early flight this morning and I'm changing planes right now. Do you want to try to still squeeze this on? And I thought that was pretty big of him to be able to do that. And so we did. And he was great, by the way. Really, really nice guy. So, you know, you might be a redneck. Yeah. And the same thing happened with the Sniglets. Rich Hall was a writer for David Letterman's old morning show on NBC. And then when that guy canceled, he went over to, not necessarily the news, on HBO. That was a funny show. There was a lot of really, really funny stuff on that show. Then he went back, you know, basically to his show business roots, which was stand-up comedy, and did very, very well. As a matter of fact, the last year that I was involved with the Food and Cash Salvation Bash, which was was 1990, and we paid him a couple of $1,000s, flew him in first class. We had connections at TWA at that time, and we put him in a nice hotel, and he came and he was the featured comedian at the Food and Cash Salvation Bash in front of like 7,000 people. It was fantastic. Rich Hall, really, really funny guy. And that Tom Cruise thing is a riot as more and more people watch the Top Gun sequel, even though all it is a rehash of all the stuff that happened in the first movie. People say, is it a good movie? You go, well, it depends. It depends. If you saw the first one, you've already seen the second one. You know, and I don't know anybody who didn't see the first one. And as Linda Ellerbe and Lloyd Dobbins used to say, and so it goes. All right, now, cold weekend. Yeah, it's going to be really, really cold this weekend. A lot of wind. You got the rain. And things will sort of moderate as we get into the week. And then there's already indications that sometime maybe late week next week, maybe into the weekend, that it could get a little wintry across the Midwest somewhere. Of course, way too early to know that. A lot of people only care about the winter warm-up this weekend and asking a lot of questions of the Cardinal organization about Matt Holliday, who's going to be the bench coach. And then, I don't know, it got to be, what are we, like I said, 33 days away from Cardinal spring training, and Matt says, you know what? Oklahoma's really nice this time of year, and I got this family, and I've got all these millions of dollars that I got paid for playing baseball, and I got a beautiful wife, and what in the hell was I thinking about trying to get into this mess again with all the travel and everything? Am I crazy? Now, that is the official story. Cardinal Nation not buying it, and I should further specify, pissed off and not buying it. A lot of people think that maybe as he immersed himself into the situation a little bit further, maybe he found that things weren't going to be as peachy as they were when he was a big contract player. And now when you're coaching, things are different. I don't know. We're just living in this era right now where no matter what anybody says, all you have to do is turn to anti-social media and you'll find somebody who disagrees with it or is calling you a liar, which is fascinating for me because that's sort of my thing. My thing is not to lie to anybody or mislead anybody. My thing, going all the way back to when I got to St. Louis in 1984, is that I'm brutally honest to a fault. I've never gotten in trouble from anybody saying, oh, JC, you lied. I've gotten in trouble for being way too honest. And as Jack Nicholson said, in A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth, or at least there are a lot of people who can't handle it. If you're listening to this right now, you probably can. But, you know, as all of you, I think, have come to realize, I keep extensive archives not just things that have happened on the show so I can play back the genitalia bit or the Rachel Ray bit or Wet Dream or something like that. I'm talking about extensive notes on history. And when I say history, I'm not talking about, you know, the War of 1812. I'm talking about like what happened in St. Louis on this date 20 years ago. And then people go, oh, God, I remember that. And then you talk about it a little bit. But I can, you know, say something on anti-social media, back it up with the actual fucking newspaper article, post that, and there are people who will say, that never happened. It's like trying to argue with a flat earther, you know? Just nothing you say is going to make any difference at all. There was a shot, I'm going to say maybe within the last 10 days. And as, I don't know if it was the James Webb or it was the Hubble, whatever it was, but it was one of those things that's out there flying around taking pictures. And what it did is it waited for the Earth and the Moon to get almost in alignment. And then from way, way out there in space, for the first time ever, a shot of the Moon from the dark side. And then way back in the distance, you see Earth. So it's a shot of the part of the Moon we never see because this thing is way, way out there in outer space, looking back towards Earth. And so, you know, here comes the Moon. It starts swinging around. In just a little while, it's going to, you know, block the view of the Earth. But right before it got to that point, they said, all right, push the button. It took the picture, sent it back to Earth, and there it is, the shot from way, way out there in deep space, looking back at the dark side of the Moon, and then way in the distance, you see Earth. And it's a beautiful, beautiful photograph, which is interesting because it's the side of the Moon we never see. So you go over to social media, and you get these mental midgets who are like, it's the dark side of the Moon. It's all lit up. You can tell it's CGI'd. You think I'm making that up? I'm not. The guy actually posted that because it's the dark side of the Moon for us here on Earth. It doesn't mean that the other side of the Moon is not illuminated. It's that the you know, we're spinning, but the Moon isn't. I can't believe I'm explaining this to some people out there. Oh, my God, it's just right. Like I said, if you're here and you're listening to this, I know you're already hip and you're smart and you're ahead of a good chunk of civilization. That's why you're here. But I'm telling you, it's incredible the stupid things that people say when it comes to interplanetary travel and space telescopes and all that sort of stuff. Anyhow, Joe McEwing, who has spent, well, I think like the last 15 years as one of the coaches for the Chicago White Sox, former St. Louis Cardinal for a couple of years, guy came up in the Cardinal organization, solid baseball man, will be our bench coach behind Ollie Marmol. And it is Marmol, just think of like marble. There are still people in St. Louis saying, and sportscasters still saying Ollie Marmol, which is incorrect, but they couldn't even spell Lisa Marie Presley correctly last night on Channel 4. Presley. Okay, you got close. Priscilla is a lovely woman, by the way, and I feel worst of all, I guess, for her. She's very. I've interviewed her a couple of times. She's a real sweetheart, and you know, she's obviously got a good sense of humor because she did the Naked Gun movies with Leslie Nielsen. And, you know, when you're in a room with somebody and you can absorb a little bit of what their spirit is. She was lovely. She was really, really sweet. And, you know, again, people say for my daughter, who is 13, has displayed some very, I guess you would say, solid chops when it comes to entertainment type stuff and being on camera and dancing around and just, you know, being on the internet. She's got some show business in her. There's no question about it. But when was the last time you heard about some kid who came up in a show business situation and came out normal? Jesus, even one of Tom Hanks' sons is a total fuck up. But she also may have been lying about her age there for a couple of years because didn't they say yesterday she was 52 and now it turns out she was 55. So there's 3 years unaccounted for there somewhere. But the tragedy in the Presley family continues. But, you know, she had been struggling with a lot of drugs. She was on the Golden Globes the other night and she looked like a cadaver then. And I don't mean to be insensitive about this, because this thing yesterday really shook people up, because she was one of the icons of the generation of people who came along at that time, and you know, her presence on Earth meant something to a lot of people. I do find it a little bit amusing when she's being identified as a musician. Lisa Marie Presley's job was to walk around and be Elvis's daughter. That was her job. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But she's gone, and so is Tom Brady's money. Apparently, you know, he'd been one of the spokespeople for cryptocurrency, and apparently he lost $45 million in the crypto crash, which is interesting because you figure, even though Gisele Bündchen was making, she was worth $400 million, he was worth $250 million, so I don't know what the arrangement was for her. I'm sure she ain't getting alimony from Tom Brady, but what a... Sheesh. Can you imagine the lawyers, what the lawyers made on that? It was almost like the Stan Kroenke deal. You get $750 million. It's been awarded to the city of St. Louis. Oh, by the way, the lawyers are taking about $250 million of that. Here's your $500 million. Now you got a divorce with people throwing that kind of money around? Should have been a lawyer. Speaking of Tom Brady, a lot of football. A lot of football. This is when people get divorced. This is when it happens. You know, you got all the wild card games. You got 2 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday, and then the Monday night game, and that's Tom Brady in there. The Buffalo game. Sunday at noon, and you know who they're going to bring out. And you know the kind of ovation he's going to get. I mean, this is going to be epic. The whole thing also reminded me of a bit that George Carlin did. George Carlin.
And what can we do to silence these Christian athletes who thank Jesus whenever they win, never mention his name when they lose? Not a word. You never hear him say, Jesus made me drop the ball. The good Lord tripped me up behind the line of scrimmage. According to these guys, Jesus is undefeated. Meanwhile, these assholes are in last place. Must be another one of those miracles.
You know he's not wrong. Wall Street Journal did a write-up on how cowboy fashion has gotten big in cities and suburbs because of the show Yellowstone. If you were around, and let me get the year right, this would have been 1980-81, right in there. Urban Cowboy. Same thing happened. People went to see Urban Cowboy, and then they started dressing up like cowboys in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. And we weren't supposed to make fun of them. It's like back in the 80s, going to a Madonna concert. 20,000 girls, all dressed like Madonna. If you are up Sunday morning, and I've been watching the show since it came on the air in 1979, when two-thirds of it was artsy-fartsy stuff about people playing oboes and stuff, and Charles Kuralt on the road, CBS, all that sort of stuff. So I've been watching the show for a long time. This weekend, they're going to run an interview with Pamela Anderson. Now, must be the anniversary or something. That's all I can think. Oh, I know. It's a documentary called Pamela, A Love Story. It's going to hit Netflix on January 31st. And there's been a couple of movies about the Pamela and Tommy Lee thing, but I don't know what this one's about. This one, they say, though, is a documentary. Anyhow, Pamela Anderson basically says the tape was not meant for public consumption. No shit. Thank you. Here's the quote. The quote from Pamela Anderson. It was two crazy naked people in love. We were naked all the time and filming each other and being silly, but those tapes were not meant for anybody else to see. She added, quote, I've not seen it to this day. It was very hurtful. And I don't even know what version of the story to believe anymore. The story that I heard was that they made the tape and that it was sitting there somewhere while they were having some work done on the house, and you had some contractors in there, and one of the contractors lifted the tape, and that's how it got published. And have you ever had any contractor work on your house? You're thinking to yourself, I could see that. We're having work done on our house in our first marriage, and the guy stole all of our silver. They just lifted it. There were guys coming and going. You got water guys and heat guys and plumbing guys and construction guys and carpenter guys and inspectors and people coming and going in and out of the house like 16 hours a day. And one day our silver was just gone. Speaking of Priscilla Presley, it's one of the final scenes in The Naked Gun. as a matter of fact, because Ricardo Montalban's character grabs her and she says, I can't believe that you would do this to me. She goes, and Ricardo Montalban says, you're forgetting about the 3 years I spent as a building contractor. And it got a big laugh in the movie. I wonder why. There's something else I wonder. I was in Target last night. My daughter, my 13-year-old, is basically getting a room at Target because it's cheaper than having to drive her there as often as I have to drive her to Target. And then there's a Super Target that's a few miles away from that, and sometimes it requires a trip to that one. But I was just standing in the electronics aisle last night looking at some stuff, and I realized I hadn't, I don't know, I guess I wasn't paying attention. Do you know Polaroids are back? And it makes no sense to me. When we all have digital cameras with high resolution on our phones, and you can take a picture of anything, anytime, anywhere. We've known that for years now. So why on earth would you need a Polaroid where traditionally, you know, the only reason Polaroid cameras were a hit, because people like to fiddle with stuff. And the idea of, all right, take a picture and then what? Look at this. And people, your aunt would always wave it in the air like that was going to speed up the the process of developing the picture. And it would come out, and it was never a very good picture, even if you had really good light. It was just low-resolution cameras. But the beauty of it was that you could go into a Holiday Inn on a weekend and take nude photographs of your girlfriend or your wife or your husband or boyfriend, and then you would have them immediately, and you didn't have to worry about, well, how would I ever get this developed? I can't exactly take this to Walmart. So you could develop it yourself. Well, we don't need that service anymore because we have digital cameras. So I can't understand. I almost wanted to stand there all day and wait to see if somebody came in and bought one and just said to them, all right, now I need some explaining, Lucy. But anyhow, so it's $99 for the camera. That's not exactly cheap. And then you get 20 shots for $10. You put the film canister in there and they give you 20 shots for $10. I don't get it. It was on this date in 1988 that the career of one Robin Williams got turned around. Hollywood had no idea what to do with Robin Williams. They gave him the Popeye movie and some other stuff that it never really... Oh, what was the movie called? It was called... it was about him being a football star, and he went back and tried to recreate some football game that they lost, and this time they were going to try to win, or just something like that. Like I said, the movies, Robin, it was hard to recall that there was a time like this. They had no idea what to do with Robin Williams. And then Good Morning Vietnam came along, and it changed his entire career. It was a great idea to use him in that fashion. 1996. I was on stage with the Funny Bone welcoming Bill Maher, who was a dick, and he's still a dick today. He just happens to have a good TV show. 1986. Oh, this was a riot. NBC came along and said, we're going to pick out, you know, like maybe a dozen of the biggest radio stations in America, and you and a lucky listener get to fly to Miami, where you will be extras in an episode of Miami Vice. This in 1986. And so it was that we had a contest and brought the gal along with me down to Florida, checked into the hotel, had a very early call for the TV show, and then they put us into wardrobe, even got a box lunch out of the deal. So we reported at 7 a.m. At 9:45 p.m., we shot our scene. It was actually the one with Frank Zappa. Frank Zappa played some sort of drug lord. And there was a pool scene, pool party scene at night. And Don Johnson was there, and they did their scene, and we all stood around the pool being extras and looking like we were attending this pool party. I was on camera for 4 seconds, but I got to know Frank Zappa a little bit and got to observe Don Johnson up close, Missouri boy that he is. Because there was a party the night before, and they gave him the key to the city of Miami. The mayor was there and everything like that. And somehow, I ended up in the shot. I had no business being up there with them. It was like Philip Michael Thomas, and there's the director, Michael Mann, and there's Don Johnson. And then there's me. There's a great shot of me getting interviewed by Entertainment Tonight. There's the reporter, and there's the microphone with the mic flag on it that says, you know, ET Entertainment Tonight. And they're interviewing me. Somehow they got the idea I was important because I had gotten in that picture. It still cracks me up to this day. All right. You, man, having a birthday on Sunday. He will be 66 years old. John, you're catching me. John and I just had lunch a couple of weeks ago. On tomorrow's date, Saturday, in 2003, the incredible actor Jeff Daniels, who will do stuff like Terms of Endearment and The Purple Rose of Cairo, but will also turn around and do stuff like Dumb and Dumber. He showed up in St. Louis at the Kenrick Cinema in South County to introduce lucky listeners who give tickets to the show, a movie called Super Sucker, which was one of the most infantile, juvenile, scatological pieces of movie trash I've ever seen. But I think he was doing a favor to some friend of his that was a first-time director or something. So he said, sure, I'll be in the movie Super Sucker, and don't rent it. And on Sunday's date in 1997, maybe you remember this. I sure do, because I was chipping ice off everything around my house for weeks. Big ice storm hit St. Louis on Sunday's date back in 1997. I remember I lived at the bottom of a hill, and we had a bunch of people come over to the house over the weekend, and they couldn't get up the hill. They couldn't get up the hill because of the ice. So they were actually driving on people's lawns trying to get up the hill. A couple of them made it. One did not. We had to call her a cab. I've lived all around the St. Louis area. I lived in Baldwin. I lived in Chesterfield a couple of different times. I lived in Ladue for a couple of years. And it's the only place I ever lived where I had trouble with neighbors. And in this particular instance, there was a house behind us and down a hill and behind some trees a little bit. So you couldn't necessarily see the houses behind us because of the trees. But any sound that was back there came straight up the hill and right into our backyard. And I just kept hearing this dog barking all the time. The dog was barking like crazy. And you could tell it was some sort of a hound or something because it had a distinctive bark. And it was just barking day and night, day and night, day and night. And it was the summer. It was hot out. And so I figured I'm just going to walk down the hill. It was the middle of the day. It didn't look like anybody was around. And I wanted to get a look at what was going on. Why would this dog be barking like this? And so I did something I probably shouldn't have done. I went on a neighbor's property and went in the backyard and looked. And sure enough, there's this beagle on a chain that was 3 feet long. Now, spread your arms out there, okay? 3 feet, you know, yardstick. That's how long the chain was, 3 feet. And this dog was barking day and night. I called the Humane Society and basically said this dog is being abused. Well, maybe we'll send somebody out. You know, nothing ever happened. Previously, when I had lived in Ladue at a different location, I was just down the hill from Clayton Road, and one of those really, really nice houses right around the old Ladue Market there, Clayton and Price. I lived over there, and I was sort of down a hill. But the, like I said, the house at the top of the hill was owned by a guy who also had a dog. And see, these things are very, very difficult for me to understand, because in our family, when we have pets, the pets practically sit at the dinner table with us. I've been in houses where the attitude is like, oh yeah, that's the dog. And it doesn't even seem like anybody in the family is even interacting with it. And in our house, that's not the way it is. Like I said, in our house, our cats, our dogs are practically people. So when you get a situation where it's like 20 degrees and it's 1:30 in the morning and there's a dog outside that's been barking since 7 o'clock at night, and you realize that because it's Ladue, this guy's at the club. He's getting tanked. And so he chains up the dog, leaves the dog outside in 20-degree weather. He's still pounding him back at the club. We're trying to sleep. And also, it makes it especially difficult because not only are you trying to sleep, you're thinking to yourself, this poor dog. You know, talk about neighbors. This was the guy, by the way, who, when I had a pool installed, okay, and you have to get all these permits and everything like that. And the contractors that built the pool had all the contract stuff done. They had all of the permits, everything they needed. And in this particular case, they finished the pool a day ahead. All right. So like the permit said, you can start filling the pool on June 15th. Well, they finished on June 14th and they said, well, let's go ahead and fill it up now. And so they ran the fire hose from the hydrant up the street and then down the street and into our backyard and into the pool. This guy's wife at the top of the hill called the police on us. They have a fire hose and they're doing this. And Like, how does this even affect you, Mrs. Kravitz? This is even on your street. It's on the street behind you. It in no way affects you. And the police came and they said, I'm sorry, the permit starts tomorrow, not today. You got to stop. And so they had to disconnect the whole thing. And I had like 3 feet of water in the pool. So you get into these situations where if you got bad neighbors, I really feel for you, because that, I think, might be about the worst thing that can happen to you, is to have bad neighbors, because you can never get away from it. But I think there's this common misconception that it's poor people who don't appreciate animals, don't treat them well, and in some cases even abuse them. And I'm telling you, it runs through all socioeconomic boundaries. Because as I said, two of the worst cases of animal abuse that I saw close up, and when I say abuse, I'm not talking about the horrific stories that you see coming out of like St. Genevieve County, things like that. I'm talking about a 3 foot long chain on a beagle and a dog that is chained up for 7 hours in 20 degree weather in, of all places, Ladue. I want to thank everybody for all of the kind messages that they've left me the last couple of days on the passing of our little boy here, Victor. I can't talk about this, to be honest. It's very, very terribly sad in our house. You have anything for 17 years and then you don't have it anymore, you're going to notice that. I keep turning around expecting him to be sitting in this chair here like he always was, and he's just never going to be there again. And I know it's not going to hurt like this forever. I'll eventually get over it, but I'm not even close right now. But it was nice to get the literally hundreds of messages that I got on social media and email at jc@jconline.com. Thank you very much. It's nice to know that we all understand one another. People who are not only pet owners, but devoted pet owners. Go ahead. Let people who don't have pets make fun of us. It's them I feel sorry for, because they'll never allow themselves to have a relationship with an animal like a lot of us do. It's their loss. Let them laugh and point and giggle all they want. They're the losers. But Victor was a hell of a cat, man. They broke the mold after they made this cat. And I've had so many cats during my life, and I love them all, for different reasons. It's almost like kids. You love them all, but all for different reasons. Victor was a good boy, and this was one of the hardest things I have ever had to do. And your kind words have really, really meant a lot to me. Thanks so much. And that's it, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Friday, the 13th of January, 2023. 33 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. Going to have Monday off for Martin Luther King birthday, back on Tuesday. Please spread the word that we are here every weekday morning. Again, sorry about the lateness of the podcast today, but man, oh man, you're at the mercy of a computer when it says, we're going to spend the next hour slowly, as slow as we can figure out, to download a bunch of new stuff on your computer. Why don't you go out and have breakfast and then come back? And that's sort of what the situation was today. So bear with me, please. We are here every weekday morning, roughly at about this time, again on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Email jc@jconline.com. You'll watch a lot of football this weekend. We'll reconvene on Tuesday morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.